Hello and welcome to Doc Young's Wrestling Weekly. My name is Victor Sosa, joined as always by the legend Les Thatcher. Les, I had done absolutely everything right this week. I got our pre-show email together, actually managed to send it out. You've received it. We got a chance to look it over. Everything was all good. We just spent the last 10, 15 minutes catching up and talking about a few things that we're going to get to over the course of this show. And you'll never guess what happened.
I give up. What happened?
I pull up the Twitter machine and I see breaking news.
I can't wait. That's why you and David Muir, you guys.
I'd like to have his hair. Let's see.
Amy on Good Morning America is hotter than you are. I got to admit to that.
So apparently in the last 20 or so minutes, WWE has announced that effective immediately, Paul Triple H Levesque will resume his executive position as EVP of Talent Relations, Les.
Thank God, I think. I'm not sure. Maybe he's changed his politics and you know, he's going to fall into line too. I don't know. But at least it's a wrestling person in a position that a wrestling person should be in.
Well, that is true. This quote from Mr. Levesque straight off of the WWE corporate website. And this article has also been copied onto the main WWE site. One quote, I look forward to returning to my prior position as head of talent relations. I'm healthy, fired up, and ready to take charge, end quote.
All right.
Well, I sincerely hope he's right. I want him to be healthy.
Yes, along with being healthy. Of course, Bruce will probably be upset. there might be less comedy. I can only hope.
Bruce's personal flag is flying at half mast today, but, you know, he's still got access to Vince, so he's got what counts.
But we do have all kinds of things to talk about this week, do we not?
We do. We do, as a matter of fact. And we're going to get back to that plan here in just a second, because if we have any other thoughts about Paul Levesque, we can get into that when we get to WWE discussion. And there's some things there with respect to SummerSlam, which is happening next weekend. But it's really a big weekend for Ring of Honor / AEW, coming off the big barbed wire match main event on Dynamite this week, which I know we have a few thoughts we want to share. But there's also a big pay-per-view on Saturday. As we record this on Friday morning, there is quite the lineup, I think, for Ring of Honor's Death Before Dishonor, their second pay-per-view since Tony Khan has taken over the company, and a wide-ranging amount of subjects he covered on his conference call yesterday, including the possibility of a regular television show for Ring of Honor. He did not give a whole lot of details on that. He just said negotiations are ongoing between he and his television partners on a number of things, including Ring of Honor. But he also did say that the Briscoes are what he called under long-term Ring of Honor contracts. What'd you think of that?
Well, I don't know. I'm not sure what a long-term Ring of Honor contract, how it reads, how many pages. Well, it means, they can only work outside of since Khan owns Ring of Honor, or at least all the, without a TV show, he owns the rights. So I guess that is contract in his hands. So they can only work outside of that sphere, on his say so. I would assume, which I'm not sure that they want to do a lot of that either. They're a valuable team. There are no doubt about that. And the two out of three fall coming up with, my boys, Dax and company. That's going to be a hell of a match. I mean, there's no doubt that it'll be the second match that's going to be somebody. I don't get into voting on these things, but it's certainly a match of the year. I mean, it's solid. It's more about wrestling and less about spots and comedy and nonsense. And I look forward to it. I mean, it should be one hell of a match. Two out of three falls in this day and age. A lot of people think, well, that's a stipulation. Realize for those of you who are young people, all of our matches were two out of three falls for the most part back in the 60s and 70s, and, I mean, you might have a couple one fall, 20-minute time limit to open a show, but your main card, your main events are, unless there is a stipulation which would make them a one fall to a finish or something, we're basically championship matches, two out of three falls.
You know,
so these guys, Go ahead.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt, but I did want to ask this because I'm getting to the point in my life. I think I said this a couple of weeks ago, where if the thought pops into my head and I don't spit it out immediately, it's gone forever.
But I know the feeling. I'm there. Been there.
You referenced the fact that so many more matches back in the days of the territories were 2 out of 3 falls. And so you had extensive experience working 2 out of 3 falls matches as well as 1 fall matches. This obviously is a very high profile match with the Ring of Honor World Tag Team Championships on the line. And of course, the reputations of these two teams precede themselves, and especially the match they had a few months back, WrestleMania weekend. But can you talk to me a little bit about the basics of the way your mindset is different in approaching a 1 fall match as opposed to a 2 out of 3 fall match, particularly a high profile one? I mean, I imagine there are certain things or certain ideas with respect to how you pace the match that are drastically different in a 2 out of 3 falls match compared to a 1 fall match.
Well, sure, of course, and the time limits you're going to put in, obviously, because, in a single match, I try to teach, you want to accelerate into your finish. And I'm going to say this, and if we have new listeners out there on Spotify and Apple and so forth, so on, everybody laughs when I say, but a good wrestling match is like good sex. It begins with foreplay and builds to a climax. And you can say that about most of the modern matches because they are one fall for the greatest part. But in 2 out of 3, you really want, you've got 3, if you're going to go with the full 3 falls, then you want to use that particular build to the climax 3 times. So you've got, and stop and realize this, back in our day, we didn't sit down and lay out 3 falls, we laid out 3 finishes. And to get to those finishes, we had to create on the fly. But, there's various ways you can. And now, an upset, somebody, let's say, for example, you win the first, you actually get a pin the first fall. Well, somebody's already thinking, so whoever you're wrestling, they're going to catch the second one, and you guys will go to the third. What if you get disqualified, or he gets disqualified in that second fall, and now you've just won 2 straight, but you haven't actually beaten him 2 straight falls. So you have an open-ending thing where you can come back again. Or you can go 2 falls and then to a draw. Or no falls to a draw. I mean, there's a lot of combinations you can use, or the team that's going to lose could win the first fall and lose 2 straight still, the second and third fall. But it's not so much that they're losing them, it's how they would lose them. If a heel's getting over that way, then he's, his foot on the rope, he's holding the tights, he's done something illegal. If it's a baby face, then he's basically just outsmarted that heel who it looked like to everybody in that building that heel had him, the heels were switching in and out, had him beat, and wow, they were able to catch him. The baby face just outsmarted him at the last ditch effort, and boom, now they have won the thing. So there's so many ways, but again, when you're building that first fall, if you're going to full 3, realize you've got 2 more to go. So I won't think with these two teams there will be a problem, but I would think with some of the much younger guys trying to wrap their head around, we got to save some of this crap that we're doing, and we can't do it all in the first fall because it's got 2 more falls. That makes sense?
Yes, sir.
Where they're so, get so wound up to get all their stuff in, right? So it'll be interesting. And I don't know if any of the younger, it's funny, when Dragon and them went the 60 minutes, I saw some young people say, why would they do 60 minutes in a 2-hour show? Like, why not? It's the best match in the joint, right? The best match that week, probably the best match that month. I don't even remember. But some of the younger people, it'll be an education. I would say that. To a lot of people watching, if they're not accustomed to it, this match should be a clinic because you've got 4 guys who can go. And I'll tell you, I know we're not talking about AEW's TV from Wednesday night yet, but Dax laid down at one hell of a promo. I mean, he killed it, man. I sent him a message on Twitter saying, you know, man, what a hell of a promo. And my prayers and blessings to your daughter. But I mean, it was. I saw this morning they've got a T-shirt.
As they should.
Yeah, fight like an 8-year-old girl.
That's right.
And the money, the proceeds all goes to Cancer Society.
Awesome stuff. Can't argue with that.
Yeah. These guys are, to me, they are tag team wrestling in the year 2022. I mean, they're everything I would want it to be 30 years ago, 40, 50 years ago, and it's everything it should be today, and for the most part isn't. But yet they can step out of that and, you know, get involved in other things too. But that's one of the things that I like. They have built a strong tag team, you know, with good psychology and good wrestling. So I don't know who's going to win this one. I don't know if I'd even try to call it, you know. Flip a coin, Briscoe.
Well,
but I would think that FTR has to come out with on the top end here, which can still go three falls. It can go no falls and let them steal one with 3 minutes left in the match.
Yeah, so technically you could win a 2 out of 3 falls match by only scoring one fall, let's say 58 minutes.
Sure. Absolutely. I can't remember an opponent, but I know on a couple occasions I remember seeing or reading, or maybe I was even there, it's been too many years, that Fez, for one person, who had gone almost the complete time limit with his challenger and then, you know, caught the fall with just a few minutes left on the clock.
You know what?
So, yeah,
can you talk to me about the reverse of that? Because I'm sitting here thinking that might have happened once or twice as well that I can think of, but my memory is not 100% on that. In a 2 out of 3 falls match where the only fall was actually won by the challenger late in the match, and because it was only one fall won over the champion and not two, the title did not change hands. Am I right about that?
No, I don't think so.
No? Okay.
I've never known it. If a challenger were to win, I would think if it was the only fall, some promoter may have instituted that rule, and you may, you know, that could have been something that happened up in your part of the world.
Right.
And you remember it because of that. I'm not saying it has never happened, but I've never seen that with that rule imposed.
Well, you should know, I guess, because you wrote the NWA rulebook.
I copied it. Yes. What he's talking about, for those who don't know, in the magazines that I did for Mid-Atlantic Wrestling back in the 70s, we printed a copy of the NWA rulebook in the back inside cover, I believe it was. And I see that thing pop up on Twitter, on Facebook. You know, people will print it and say, where'd this come from? I hold my hand up. I did that. I didn't make them up. Here's a funny story, real quick. George Scott's son sent me an email. Now, when George was booking his son, God, he couldn't have been more 3 or 4 or 5 years old, I guess, 6 years old. He sent me a message and asked, how did the rule change come about? That rule change, we're talking about the tag teams. I'd like to see this reinstituted. You were allowed 2 saves, and the 3rd save got you a disqualification, which made the match more interesting, gave the commentator something to talk about. So my point being is you have a partner, and you saved him from a pin or a submission, whatever, twice. And if I'm doing the commentary with whoever's on the mic with me, wow, you know, Vic's got to be careful now, you know. Does he save his partner and drop the match, or does he hope, you know, that his partner can make the tag before he's beaten? So it adds a little suspense, don't you think?
I agree. I remember hearing that.
And
then it went, and then because Vince McMahon has his secret rules, things he gets started on and then forgets about. For a while, they did have the two-save rule in WWE, but it was only known to everybody not on the air. I mean, the announcers were aware of it, but they weren't allowed to talk about it.
Well, I know when George first took the book, George Scott, I'm talking about, when that particular rule was instituted, we actually you know, got some guys disqualified to show that the rule works, you know. And but anyway, son, it said, how does that rule come about? I said, your dad said, well, I want to make it two saves and disqualify to try the third one. And I said, okay, and I wrote it in. The best thing I know. So there wasn't any long drawn out voting or anything. But yeah, I would like to see that rule come back into the tag team. That's what Vic's talking about. Me writing the rule book, not hardly, but anyway, we copied it in the Mid-Atlantic magazine.
You saw enough of it to remember the rules. So I figured if that was in there, you would have seen it.
I can't say that some promoter didn't use that to get a return match. But I've never been in a territory or seen it, used in that manner. So, I wouldn't say it hasn't been, because that happened, that happens today. You know, somebody will think, well, we just instituted this rule. I've never seen that rule before. Well, we just made it up about 5 minutes ago. It's a work, man.
Also in AEW land, we got some interviews this week from Adam Cole talking about his injuries and his potential return. He did not give an exact date, obviously, because when you're rehabbing, not only coming back from a concussion that he suffered at Forbidden Door, but the shoulder issues that he's had, that timetable is probably something he's keeping pretty close to the vest, and it all depends on how well things are going at that rehab situation. But also, particularly not just because of a wrestler's natural instinct to want to get back out there as soon as possible, but because of the current injury situation in AEW, that Adam Cole has opted against surgery and is doing rehab for his shoulder.
I hope that works for him. I think part of the reason Adam needs to get back in the weight room a little bit. And I say, I love Adam. I've known Adam since he started in the business, and he's my buddy. He needs to get back in the weight room. And I'm wondering if maybe the bad shoulder is something, that prevented that, because he usually is a little more, a little more on top of his weight training and stuff. But I hope he gets back. That's one of the things right now. To me, the most important people that I want to say, well, I shouldn't say all of them, but a number of the people that I watch AEW for aren't on the roster at this point in time. They're on the shelf rehabbing. So I hope he gets back. They need him and Dragon and Kyle and Lord knows whoever else. And I guess Omega is coming back pretty quick, too.
Well, word on the street is he's targeting All Out for his potential return. Obviously a great place to come back, the big pay-per-view on Labor Day weekend. And there's apparently, sprouting from that story, or maybe just in a somewhat related note, high hopes, at least, and I use and underline the word hopes, that CM Punk will also be back in time for All Out as well.
Yeah, if everybody came back, that certainly would not hurt that show in the least. These guys have got to start. I think it comes down to, I don't know if it's any worse now than it was years. I need to do a better goofy bump than the guy just did one before me, or the guy that did one last week. I think there's more of that now, because I don't think the guys are overseen in terms of what match they're on and how much they're allowed to do. Now it's open season. Get all your shit in. And of course it was, back in the day, the preliminary matches obviously didn't do a lot of the big stuff that it was being saved for the main event, which is good business, boys and girls. It is not old school or new school. It's just good common sense to make if you're going to run a 2-hour show, save your biggest and baddest match for the close out the show. Let them go home remembering the best thing they saw. But I don't know. Yeah, they've too many guys are hurt, and the shame of it is some of these guys that are out are actually probably some of the better wrestlers on that roster too. I mean, in terms of actual technical wrestling.
And I have to tell you, I don't think it's any coincidence that these guys started going down and we started having much more of a critical eye towards Tony Khan's booking. You know, the whole thing about doing too much and 8 million yep. people, you know, a lot of that was toned down when you had CM Punk, Bryan Danielson, and folks like that taking up 15, 30, 45 minutes in the show. It made the show a lot easier to book.
Yes. Yep. It sure did. It sure did. You're absolutely right. Yeah, I think they need all those guys back. We're going to talk about AEW's TV in a little while, so I won't get too crazy.
Oh, no, no.
We can move on.
If you want to do that, let's do that, because we're a couple of minutes away from giving a few Death Before Dishonor predictions. So now would be a great time to discuss what you saw on Dynamite this week. Now, you said to me off the air, you figured now, I guess, just like that, the Jurassic Express is back together. And I say not so fast, my friend. Just because Luchasaurus stood next to Jungle Boy this week in this company that likes swerves on top of swerves, I want to see a Jungle Boy versus Christian Cage match and Luchasaurus stick with the kid before I'm sold that he's jumped ship and reformed this team.
Well, we'll see, won't we, by gosh. Yeah, you're right. I probably spoke too hurriedly when I said that. Well, I will say this. We saw some graphic violence on Wednesday.
We did.
I'm going to agree with Brian and Dave about, Darby got ragdolled. I mean, the fact that he's still walking, if he is, and not, Brody kicked his ass. I could say it nicer, but it wouldn't make a lot of sense to say it any nicer. And of course, we had the natural afterbirth to go with that. Not sure why. The kid that supposedly failed a drug test with WWE, he had a decent match with Ricky Starks. Starks, I see, is coming along. I mean, really, he's getting better. And I'm watching those two guys, and I'm thinking, man, maybe Starks could work a little higher on the card on down the road. I mean, they've got plenty of depth with good talent, but this kid is improving, almost with each outing. But then I saw Danhausen come out, and I thought, well, maybe Ricky is going to be part of the song and dance team of Jerry Lewis and Dean Martin and Danhausen and Ricky Starks, joining Isfri and Cassidy. I don't know. I'm sorry. I don't know Tony Khan, but I'm not interested in watching Saturday morning cartoons on Wednesday night or Friday night for that matter. If you're going to use your clowns, use them, but don't use them with people who are top guys. It's your world, Tony. I'm just passing through it, but I don't think it's good business because it. Again, I'm going back to perception is reality. If you showcase your champions like clowns, then they're champion clowns. I'm sorry. Dave has noticed what we've talked about. Jade needs some ring time. You think?
You've been saying that since the first time you saw her.
Yes, I've been saying, Dave, I've been saying that every week for I don't even know how many weeks. He's right. She, and for those who are just joined us in the last week or so, I don't know Jade Cargill. I don't dislike Jade Cargill. I think she's an attractive woman. She is in shape. She's obviously an athlete. She is not a professional wrestler yet in any way, shape, or form. The reason I didn't go ballistic but came up negative with her on the title, to me, if I am a promoter or a booker or whatever, to me, a champion, whatever, female, male, cruiserweight, heavyweight, I don't care. The champion needs to be a very talented, versatile worker who can put a match together with virtually anybody of any style. That is not Jade Cargill today. And that may be her 2 or 3 years from now, but it is not today, and it has never been. And it's obvious, if you know the business, that she's not carrying these matches. She's not. Again, she's a hell of an athlete. She's got a great look. But she is not ready to be a top flight professional wrestler. And I agree, Dave, she needs a lot of ring time, and I wouldn't put it on Wednesday night. Give her some people that are better than she is. Put them on your YouTube show and let them, instead of having 19 matches, eliminate some of those and let her get some time in with somebody who can teach her. I mean, I know she's been working with Dragon, and that's great. But, I mean, another female who she can get in the ring with and go with. And, you know, but we came down to Jericho. Yes. And as you mentioned before we came on the air, it was a graphically bloody, violent match. It will never make it even close to the top 1,000 for match of the year. Those matches, as you mentioned when we were talking off the air, they're not good matches because there's too much in the way of them being good matches. And, you know, and if you're judging these matches by that wasn't Foley and Funk either.
Oh, God, no.
Hell no. I'm sorry, boys, it wasn't. And I don't know how much of this they need either, to be honest with you. I'm not crazy about these matches. If I were still working and somebody said, hey, I want you to have one of these matches, I said, no, I don't think so. It's, again, you know, it limits how even a good worker, being a good worker in the situation. But, what I'm afraid of, Vic, is this is not over, but where do they go from barbed wire everywhere?
I don't know, but even though Jericho got the win, I remember I said to you, I'm not sure it's over because Kingston was the guy left standing tall at the end of the show, and I don't know that Jericho, strictly speaking from a storyline perspective, whether or not that Chris Jericho in AEW would be content to walk away with the win after getting tossed into that spider web of barbed wire.
Yeah, I think you make a great point, and you're probably right. Probably are right that it's not over, and
it really should be if you have that kind of match.
Yes, absolutely. And of course, the botch, whoever makes these botch films, the stupidity, people. If you're going to do something, again, for those who don't know me well or haven't listened to us much, I'm about details. That's what makes things work. And when you put these guys in a cage, and since I wanted to mention to the young lady, there's two ways that key can go in. Only go in one way, and there's only two sides to it. So let me explain to you how you put a key in a friggin' lock. But the worst thing is these guys climbing out between the bars. I mean, boys, it's a work. We know that. And you showed them where the rabbit came from, you damn fools. I'm sorry. Because as you and I mentioned off the air, in a barbed wire match, what the hell do you need run-ins for?
Well, that's the thing. They painted themselves into a corner and, you know, allegedly at the request of Discovery for this barbed wire match, right? So let's just go along with
right.
that. But you've painted yourself into a corner with a barbed wire match because they're very difficult to have good matches with because you've got the ropes wrapped in barbed wire. It limits you. And then you add the shark cage deal with the Appreciation Society locked in the cage. And then you blow that stipulation by having them escape the cage and manage to interfere in a match where there's barbed wire and there shouldn't be any interference, or at least there never used to be. So now you're just blowing everything out of the water in one particular night in order to do this the way they did it. And I just like, you know, can we just save some stuff? I mean, I'm not saying I'm necessarily opposed to ruining the whole locked in a cage and there's no escape for interference, but was it necessary here when we were already doing a whole bunch of other stuff?
Right. Well, that's it. If we can't overdo it, why do it at all? Right?
Yeah.
Right. I mean, but yeah, that was, well, it's absurd. Again, professional wrestling match, whether you, it's not about old school. It's about good business and good common sense. it should draw you in. There shouldn't be, hey, here's some great footage for the botched guys. That's not what we're trying to do here, believe it or not. And I am going to say here, I said this once on the show a few months ago, if my company were were being featured on the botch videos, I would be having a meeting with my roster and say, I'm not really excited about us being embarrassed weekly with all this crap. So here's the thing. If you can't do something the way it's supposed to be done, don't do it at all. That's like I was watching, who came out and knocked Sammy's girlfriend down and climbed her frame?
Ruby Soho, and then didn't she turn?
Ruby's beating the hell out of her shoulder.
Yeah.
I thought, Ruby, you're going to ruin. She's going to have surgery on her shoulder. Ruby wasn't even hitting her. Take your time. I'm so tired of 9,000 punches, 9,000 chops, 9,000 this or that. If you do it right and do it at the right time, you don't need all that. You truly don't. I'm sure the fans that missed ECW probably enjoyed the hell out of it, the main event.
And by the way, just so people think, oh, they just hate everything new and this is totally different, yada, yada. I would point out to you, and I don't know who was complaining about this at the time, but I thought about it and laughed to myself in hindsight earlier this week, knowing that we were going to get together today, Les. You know, the very first Great American Bash was not a tour in the days of Jim Crockett Promotions. It was one big show at a stadium in Charlotte. And right. Everybody remembers that classic main event confrontation between the evil Soviet Union super athlete Nikita Koloff against the quintessential, well-to-do American in Ric Flair, right? I mean, he's a snob, but he's our snob. And people remember that one fondly. Flair comes out of the helicopter, goes down the red carpet. He outlasts the Russian super athlete, keeps the NWA World Heavyweight Championship. It would be easy to think that was the main event. Not so, my friend. Do you know that was not the last match of the night?
I don't remember, but you do.
The last match of the night at the very first Great American Bash was Dusty Rhodes versus Tully Blanchard in a barbed wire ladder match. $100,000 hanging from the top. And the services of Baby Doll for 30 days. So, it's not like it didn't
talk
happen.
Talk about stipulation.
Exactly. It's not like it didn't happen back in the day, but it happens way too often today is my point.
Yes. Yes. Well, and let's face it, even if you're a huge fan of ECW, there's a reason that company is not around any longer.
True.
You know, and part of that is financial, I understand, but also part of it is you have a smaller niche fan base for just nothing but graphic violence, and that's what it finally ended up to be. I mean, there were some great matches, Malenko and Benoit and Mysterio and Jericho. Those guys were wrestling their asses off in ECW. Lance Storm in ECW, Candido, but everybody remembers all the blood when so and so cut this guy or this guy just jumped off the balcony or whatever, which I guess are great memories, but the company's gone. And I don't think in this day and age you need all that, But again, if you keep, the fact that AEW has used blood a couple times, but I think that it's getting to be a little more frequent than it's necessary, I think, in this day and age, truthfully.
Okay, so we're about to make some predictions for Ring of Honor's Death Before Dishonor card, but I did want to get this in before I ask you to let everybody know where they can get a hold of some really interesting wrestling DVDs that you had a big hand in producing and putting together, not just the DVD process, but actually stuff from your promotion back in the day, Mr. Thatcher. But I just wanted to point this one thing out because I've been seeing it more and more. They haven't talked about it. They've just been doing it in AEW. And I'm just going to just go out on a limb here and put it together because I haven't heard anybody talking about this. And if it's been talked about someplace, I just haven't heard it. So, but I've been looking and seeing more and more women teaming up these days in AEW. So I sat down and wrote this out. We've seen Nyla Rose and Marina Shafir team up a number of times now. We've seen Thunder Rosa and Toni Storm, Chris Statlander and Athena. Of course, the baddies, where 82 could be in a tag team match if you wanted to do it that way. We've got Britt Baker and Jamie Hayter, who've now been in tag team action together lately. And perhaps now with Ruby Soho switching sides, perhaps she and Ty Conti would be a team. I'm looking at all of this coming out of seemingly nowhere. And Tony Khan did say in a press conference or an interview a few weeks back, he's got titles made that we haven't even seen yet. And so with all these teams now, all of a sudden in the women's division, I am predicting women's tag team titles with the champion crowned at All Out.
Okay. I wouldn't be surprised. I wouldn't. But again, let me go back real briefly before we move to the DVDs. Sharing a mutual thought with Dave, Dave this week, in that, how much talent do you need, Tony? I mean, really?
Yeah.
That got me thinking. And I said to you before we started recording, and I'm going to say this here, and of course, somebody will make me out a liar, I'm sure. But I said, I'd almost be willing to give $50 to somebody that can explain to me and keep current with all the storylines going on AEW at this time.
Without Googling it, just off the
top
of your head.
Without Googling it or without, And I'm not going to give you 3 weeks to put it together and get back to me. And my point is this. I can't. I'm sure Vic can't. And I'm sure most of us that watch these shows can't. And I say that it's negative. I'm being negative. Because if you can't focus in on the hot angles, because there's so many angles, then the hottest angles aren't doing the job they're meant to do. You focus on two or three hot angles and build everything around that, and the rest of your matches, I won't say they're filler, but they're preparing guys to move up or ladies to move up, whatever the case. But to have so many storylines going at the one time, people can't keep up. I'm sorry, you just can't. And the other thing is, you're going to end up burning whoever the booker or bookers or whatever are. They're going to burn out. Sorry, but that's history. That's a fact of life. So, yeah. So it doesn't bode well to have so many storylines going on at once. And again, the industry has been devaluating things for the last 20 years, and I see no reason not to keep putting it up, although it's not profitable or it's not, it's counterproductive. But anyway.
All right. So before you get into the Briscoe Booster t-shirts, first ever professional wrestling t-shirt, by the way, and some of the DVDs that you've had a hand in, including the HWA, Heartland Wrestling Association, your promotion, which was at one point WWE developmental territory. Want to ask you this as you segue into talking about these DVDs and where they're available, as well as not just the DVD copies, but for digital download. Craziest match in terms of stipulations you ever booked in HWA?
Craziest match and stipulations. I don't think we did some death matches. We did, I don't remember we did any falls count anywhere. I didn't do a lot of crazy matches. I really didn't. And, I used some of the guys as bookers. I mean, they cleared things with me, and I signed off on them. But to me, a lot of people say, this developmental. I said, that's exactly why I'm letting these guys book, because it's a learning process. And, we didn't do a lot of crazy angles. With Helena Heavenly, she ended up, she was a manager that jumped from one cruiserweight to another cruiserweight. And then all of a sudden, to get sympathy, she's telling she was pregnant. And so many guys popped up to say they might be the father. And then we found out she wasn't pregnant. Anyway, something like that. Once in a great while. I think we only did that once ever, period. But the normal angles, Texas death match, falls count anywhere. I don't know if we did that or not. Iron Man match, things like that. But I had no scaffold matches or no cage match. We couldn't afford a cage, man. Not a good one anyway.
I was going to ask just a weird off the wall question just for the hell of it. But since you never did one, I was going to say, is the barbed wire you had to buy for a barbed wire match, is that a tax write off?
It better be. Right. I would think it's material for your business, right?
Yeah.
Sure. Funny you ask that.
Well, there won't be any barbed wire matches on these HWA DVDs, but what will there be?
Well, there'll be six-man tags. There'll be regular tags. There'll be single matches. There'll be a lot of good matches. Yeah, what Vic's talking about is Wrestling from the Heartland, the Lost Developmental Tapes. It's volumes 1 and 2, and is over 6 hours of content on each, and they're both 2 DVD sets with matches, interviews, extras. Joe Dombrowski and I do the voiceover. Joe does most of the play-by-play. I talk about the behind-the-scenes things and featuring some of the wrestlers that are on the show. And you'll see on this, obviously, a lot of the guys from my developmental, as well as some from OVW, who came up and worked some of our shows as well. And you can get these, Wrestling from the Heartlands, Volume 1 and 2, at joe-dombrowski.com or prowrestlinglibrary.com. And Joe says we've got enough footage, we might even do a Volume 3 at some point in time. And also, the Brian Pillman Show's anthology, the 20-year anniversary, 4 DVD set, over 15 hours of content, which covers all 4 of the great shows that we put on for the Pillman family. That would be in 98, 99, 2000, and 2001, with matches, interviews, footage of the auctions that we had, like JR's Stetson and D'Lo's Chest Protector and stuff like that, and awards, many extras. And you can get those at PillmanShows.com or also at Joe-Dombrowski.com or ProWrestlingLibrary.com. And as Vic says, you can also stream those. For those of you who don't know, the Pillman Shows are uniquely special for one reason. It's the only place in those 4 years that you could see WWE talent, WCW talent, and ECW talent all in the same place at the same time. And I'm proud to say that we booked those shows, and it was the only place in the universe that you could see those talents under the same roof on the same day. And they were great shows, and I think you would enjoy these. Well, on the, like I give you an example, on the last one, 2001, it was the first ever Randy Orton, John Cena match. And that was while they were both still in OVW. And so, yeah, you might want to check those out.
All right, brother, we got Ring of Honor's Death Before Dishonor card on Saturday. It's available on Bleacher Report, BR Live, and a few other places. Tony Khan says it's already tracking to be one of the most, I believe he said the most successful Ring of Honor pay-per-view. And the previous one, WrestleMania weekend, had that record. So business as it is for this company, which does not yet have a TV deal for its relaunch, is going pretty well so far, at least with what they've done. So I thought we'd take a look at least a handful of these matches. Not all of them have been announced, but we'll dial in on a few here, and then we'll move on to WWE. You've got the Ring of Honor Pure title on the line with two young stars from their respective factions in AEW, Wheeler Yuta, the champion, defending against Daniel Garcia. You know, you look at this match and you think of those Pure title rules, which tend to make it much more of a professional wrestling contest than a brawl, which leads me to believe, at least hoping with my fingers crossed, that we'll get to see some stuff from both of these guys that you don't normally get to see on Dynamite. As far as the actual championship is concerned, I see no reason to change it. I'd keep it with Wheeler Yuta.
I don't either. I think Yuta hangs on to it. Yeah, he's of the young guys that Tony Khan has conjured up in his company, I think Yuta is one of the brighter stars. I mean, there's several, but yeah, I think Yuta is one of the brightest. And obviously, Regal and Dragon and those guys think so too, because he's part of their team. But yeah, I think he retains and hangs on to that Pure title.
We have a Ring of Honor Women's Championship match, maybe the sleeper match on the show, frankly. Mercedes Martinez defending the championship against Serena Deeb. Either one can win, and you would not go wrong here. I will predict a new champion in Serena. The Professor is the new Ring of Honor Women's Champion, I predict.
That's possible. I don't know. I wouldn't, you know, it's for me, it's a coin flip here. I know both these girls. I've worked with both of them a little bit. Serena, she was still in OVW when I first worked with her. She actually showed up at a three-day weekend training camp that Steamboat Terry Taylor, Dr. Tom, and I did in the Carolinas. And, of course, Martinez, I saw her for the first time when I was up in New England. God, I can't remember how many years ago that was. And I was so impressed with her right hand. She threw on the card I was watching her on the first time I'd seen her, that my God, she throws a better right hand than any guy on this show. But yeah, that should be a good, and you're right, it could be the sleeper.
That takes us to the Ring of Honor television title match. Samoa Joe's been off TV with an injury thanks to Jay Lethal and his crew. He's going to be returning this weekend to take on Mr. Lethal for the Ring of Honor television title. Normally, I would say don't beat Samoa Joe under any circumstances. But given where Jay Lethal is hopefully headed with this faction and other people and the need to get some things going here, I think I'm going to go with Jay Lethal to win the television championship.
Well, okay, if you say so. I would have, you know, since Joe hasn't had it that long and he hasn't been that high profile, you know, on television, I would leave it with Joe at least this, and they could work a return and come back Labor Day.
They absolutely could do that. I would not disagree. Yeah. Wouldn't bother me a bit.
Wouldn't bother me either.
I would love for them to have the opportunity, and some of that obviously is the injury angle because Samoa Joe was off doing some other projects, you know, to spend some more time delving into the teacher versus student aspect of Joe and Lethal, because that's a real interesting subject in any sport, first of all, and second of all, particularly sure. In Ring of Honor, because that's where it happened.
Right.
You've got and I'm going to do this one ahead of the tag team title match because I don't know which one will go on last, but I want to reserve FTR for the Briscoes before we move on. We'll talk about the Ring of Honor World Championship match with Jonathan Gresham versus Claudio Castagnoli. Both of them obviously relatively new to the promotion. Claudio, brand new. I have no objection to Gresham as the Ring of Honor champion, but he's obviously also got something new in just turning heel and having Tully Blanchard Enterprises representing him. However, Claudio is so fresh here that I'm not sure I would not change the title. In fact, I'm going to go again for another new champion and predict Claudio Castagnoli.
Well, I would go in that direction, too, because one of the things is people are, you know, or I say people in the, you know, that's come up with the announcer, Claudio has never won a title. And, yeah, both these guys are great hands and should be one hell of a match, but I won't go against you on this. I think it wouldn't hurt at all to have Claudio as a champion, and Gresham's a hell of a talent too. If they leave it with him, I can't see them going wrong in either direction, to be honest.
And that brings us to the match we talked about earlier in the program. And I know you said you had your heart set on predicting FTR here. I'm going to give you a chance to either solidify that or change with FTR versus the Briscoes in a 2 out of 3 falls match for the Ring of Honor Tag Team Championship. Before you put that prediction of yours on paper, Les, let me first say your discussion earlier in the program of different ways a 2 out of 3 falls match can go actually talked me into the prediction I'm about to make.
Okay.
That is, we're tied at a fall apiece when time expires. It's a draw, and we bring it back.
I like that, too. I do. If I have to get a definitive winner in this match, I've got to go with FTR. The reason being that eventually they're going to be with Dave's sons, the Bucks. And I want them to eat the Bucks lunch and take every belt. And I can't, you know, if you go the other way, God, you know, people won't want to listen to me at the show after that. They really won't. But yeah, FTR is special, head and shoulders, as far as tag teams have been this year. These guys are carrying the banner. And I love the Briscoes. You know, realize I first saw them wrestle in Ring of Honor when they were underage and their mother had to attend the matches with them.
That's right. She drove them, didn't she?
Yes. Yes, she did. Yes. Before they even had enough hair to grow a beard.
That is true. Oh, my goodness. Yeah. If you have some of those early ROH DVDs or can find those videos somewhere, that is true. And they would talk about that on commentary, how their parents would be driving them to these shows.
Yeah. Yeah.
There wasn't one, at least one of them was in college at the time.
Yeah. But like I say, because FTR is going to have to wrestle the Bucks and FTR needs every belt. So, yeah, I'll quit blowing smoke here and just say I got to pick FTR here. I'm a Briscoe fan as well, but I think this is the year FTR should get all the gold and let's, you know, anoint them as the number one tag team currently in the wrestling business. I will, if nobody else will. So that's my call, Vic.
Well, we're running low on time on this edition of Doc Young's Wrestling Weekly, but I promised at least a little bit of WWE discussion. Too many interesting things happening here with this Ring of Honor pay-per-view and conference calls with Tony Khan and such. Especially with that barbed wire match thrown in between this week. So we are going to get to a couple of things of note here in WWE. But first, Les, I want everyone to know, or for them to find out exactly where they can get a hold of you for appearances, training camps, seminars and such, because we spend so much time talking about the art of professional wrestling here whenever possible, when it's done well and when opportunities are missed. And we had some of that discussion earlier today with that 2 out of 3 falls. You know, the way you approach that, yes, from a mindset standpoint. And there's a lot of knowledge that you've got available and are willing to give out to all the younger talent out there, provided their promoters, hint, hint, and wrestling schools are willing to bring you in and have you sit down with their young talent and make them better.
Yes, sir. I enjoy doing that. I really do. I can do a one-day seminar. I don't just do two-hour things. It would be a one-day seminar if we're just doing a seminar. Or I much prefer the weekend training camps. That way the boys get comfortable. We do get so much more in with 2 8-hour days and so forth and so on. But if you're interested in either one of those, you can reach me, lesthatcher28@gmail.com. I'll be more than happy to send you out the information, the cost, what I do, and, you know, what we cover. And on the weekends, we cover everything professional wrestling. And if you happen to have a weight room, I also have a background in getting bodybuilders and athletes nutritional advice and, you know, weight training. So we can even delve into that. So anyway, again, lesthatcher28@gmail.com.
All right, my brother. So I promised a quick discussion here regarding some WWE news and notes. One of them is the continuing saga, as it is, regarding all the stuff with Vince McMahon that's come out in the last few weeks between the Wall Street Journal pieces and apparently what's still to come, because apparently we've saw this week that HBO's Real Sports is working on Vince McMahon related story and all these payoffs and what have you. It'd be real interesting to see who's able to or willing to speak on the record to the HBO cameras, Bryant Gumbel and company, and who gets that assignment actually to go in and do that story, because they've got a team of great reporters who do those pieces for HBO's Real Sports on a monthly basis. And so, you know, I think both of us were a little surprised, more than a little surprised, last week that those new stories from the Wall Street Journal with the multiple payouts did not gain a little more traction in the quote-unquote real media world. And so
yeah,
HBO's Real Sports is taking another crack at it, and we'll see whether or not this story that they produce provides any more headaches for WWE.
And I agree with you. Brian Gumbel does a hell of a job on that show. I don't currently have HBO, but when I've had it in the past with other providers, I've watched that show. That's one of the HBO shows that I don't want to miss. So yeah, they should do a good story. And it would, I don't know when this Vince thing is going to be, or him and Johnny Ace, Johnny Laurinaitis. I'm not sure when all that's going to be over. Do you have any clue? Will we both still be alive when that's done?
I'm interested to see if anybody, since it's now HBO, who we haven't heard from, not just the folks who are under these NDAs and whether or not they're willing to reveal themselves, but if there's any other stories out there we haven't heard who weren't speaking, but now that HBO is involved, might change their mind and come forward.
Yeah, that's possible too. Yeah. The never ending saga, right?
Oh, my goodness. Yeah.
Wow.
In the worst way possible. So now I'm looking at this headline, and at first, Les, I saw it and thought to myself, I really love this. I'm so glad they're making a whole campaign out of it. WWE's Month of Mysterio, celebration for Rey Mysterio's 20th anniversary in WWE. They're doing all sorts of stuff on Peacock or the network, depending on where in the world you get your access to the WWE network. They're also going to be having some sort of celebration for him this Monday on Raw from Madison Square Garden. And that's when I started to get a little nervous. Beads of sweat on my forehead here, Les, because Rey is, of course, from San Diego, California. They are not in his hometown, but they are technically in WWE's hometown. Vince has always considered New York City and Madison Square Garden as the flagship of this company. And with the 20th anniversary and Rey Mysterio and everything that's been rumored about breaking up with Dominic and Dominic turning on him and the whole thing that we've done on TV on Raw in the last few weeks about Finn Balor and company from Judgment Day trying to convince Dominic to turn on his dad, I fear that it is finally going to happen this Monday on what's supposed to be a happy anniversary for Ray, because for some reason, this company never misses an opportunity to humiliate a legend on an important day.
You're so right. And I'm scared that you're right. I am, because Ray is, you know, Ray spent a few weeks with me when he first signed with WWE out of WCW, simply because the bigger ring, WWE's ring, is a 20 by, and the WCW rings are 18 by 18. And the difference in real rope on the WWE rings versus cable on the other. And so and Ray is just a good guy. We mentioned the Pillman shows earlier. I can, in my mind, see him playing with Brian Jr., who was about 4 years old at the time, and just having a hell of a time. Ray is a good guy. He's given his life and 20 years of it to time flies. I'm getting old, you know that. 20 years of it in WWE. But he's a hell of a guy. He can wrestle his butt off. He can be a luchador. He's a very versatile performer and just a tremendous human being. He really is, and I'm happy for him. And hopefully they don't embarrass him in Madison or anywhere for that matter. If you're trying to honor the guy, honor him right. Do it right and forget about the nonsense.
I don't know if it's actually on Peacock or on the network if you access WWE Network outside of the USA. But there was an early 2000s WWE DVD documentary on Rey Mysterio. It's just amazing what he's been able to do, and of course, the advancements that have been made in modern medicine. Because Rey Mysterio celebrating his 20th anniversary in WWE, it is far from his 20th anniversary in professional wrestling. He started in Mexico at, I think, 14 or 15. But yeah. I distinctly remember, it's just funny the random things that pop into your head that you remember that get filed away, you know? But in that documentary from the early 2000s on Rey, there is video of Dr. James Andrews telling Rey at that point, 20 some odd years ago, that his knees were so messed up, not only did I not want you, Dr. Andrews said to Rey, jumping off the ropes in a wrestling ring, I don't want you jumping off a curb. And here we are in 2022, and he's moving around as good as he ever has.
Yeah, yeah. And to say it's a miracle isn't stretching the truth at all either.
Not
I don't
at
think.
All.
Yeah, he's Ray's a hell of a guy. And like I say, he is richly deserving to be honored. And I'm like you. I hope it doesn't end up being something stupid and clownish. I'm tired of the business, everything in the business wanting to be like the circus, for Christ's sake. And Ray's history in the business certainly doesn't need to be portrayed that way. So let's hope, cross our fingers and everything else, that this turns out well in Madison Square Gardens.
Well, they added Logan Paul versus The Miz to SummerSlam, which is next weekend, and we'll make our official predictions on that SummerSlam card on next week's edition of Doc Young's Wrestling Weekly. But I'm looking over this lineup, and we'll talk about it next week, just as a little, you know, teaser. I'm looking at this lineup, and I see one match that I think can really walk away with this whole show behind everybody's back. I'm looking forward to talking about it, too.
Okay. Well, I guess you did want to mention the Flair.
Yes.
Angle
yes.
with Jeff Jarrett and Jay Lethal.
Now, so obviously we found out this week, last item of business here on the show, with Ric Flair's last match coming up next weekend in Nashville over the course of SummerSlam's weekend. That card is actually pretty good, as we talked about on the show last week. But we finally got Ric Flair's actual last match. It's Flair and his son-in-law, Andrade El Idolo, versus Jeff Jarrett and Jay Lethal. They set this up in the documentary pieces, which are on YouTube. Sort of like a road to kind of thing for Ric Flair's last match. If you haven't seen them and you have some time to devote to checking them out, because they're not short, they're both about 20 minutes apiece. They are actually really good pieces that feature not only David Crockett, but Bob Caudle and a few other folks from Rick's past talking about things, including some training footage with Flair and Lethal, some of that stuff which was already on YouTube, some things you hadn't seen, and the press conference that was had in Nashville in the last week or two to promote the moving of the event to the bigger arena, and just a little, ballyhoo, as any promotion should, for a show that they're putting on. But it also laid the foundation in the background for what they did at the end of that second part of the documentary, where a very physical angle took place between Ric Flair, Jeff Jarrett, and Jay Lethal to set up this tag team match. And, you know, in another place and time, I would have loved that angle that they did less. Today, with Ric Flair at 73 and so many of the magician's tricks available to everybody, I don't know. It bothered me as much as Ric Flair having another match bothers you.
Yeah. And I told you, I said, if it weren't for, you know, this is the last match, you know, that Jay is, you know, if we weren't aware of what this was all about, it would have been a hell of an angle. It would have. And it would have been well worked. But yeah, I'm not going to go through the whole pitch again about Rick and how he's a dear friend. I love him. I've known him since his rookie year and all that. But yeah, I just think, damn, you know, I just want his thing to turn out physically well. At this point, Jeff and Lethal and Andrade should make it, you know. They'll be, the three of them can work around him. And Jeff comes from a generation, should know how to work loose and protect him. And I'm sure Jay will do his damnedest to do that as well. But yeah, the angle was, I'm like you. I sat and I watched it and I realized, damn, if this was done 30 years ago, 20 years ago,
a license to print money if they had done it then.
Yes. Yes. Damn. Yes. But it wasn't, it was done a week ago or whenever, but it's, you know, I just hope the main thing for me about it looks like a good card. They've got a good undercard, but to me, the most important thing is Rick comes out of this healthy in one piece. That's my biggest concern. I just don't want to see anything happen to him.
And in the end, because we had been curious since the rumors of Ric Flair's last match were originally a few months back, Flair and FTR against the Rock and Roll Express and Rick Steamboat, wondering how they would end up doing this, since Rick Steamboat was public in saying that he was very flattered by the offer, but did not want to run the risk of having people remembering him in this match not being at his absolute best when he was still pretty damn good in his 50s and was appearing with some regularity on Monday Night Raw. So he understood and respected why he bowed out. But this match with Flair and Andrade versus Jeff Jarrett and Jay Lethal, to your point, Andrade and Lethal can take care of they can more than hold up their end against each other in this match. And Jeff Jarrett can absolutely work any kind of match you need to for Ric Flair at this point. So the pairing, at least, should work out just fine.
Yeah. Yeah. I hope so. I truly do. Like I say, I didn't see any need for that damn angle, to be honest with you.
No.
None. The little documentaries, though, are, like you say, they're entertaining. They're well done. And I hope the people that go to this get their money's worth. They're entertained. Like I say, the main thing to me is Rick walks away from this healthy, or as healthy as he can be at his age, you know, with the pacemaker and so forth, and with no other injuries or, you know, problems.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, obviously his health is first and foremost, but the other thing is that I want him to walk away feeling satisfied with what he's done on that particular night, because, and I'm not trying to be flip here, but if he doesn't, he might do it again.
Oh, I know you're not. And another friend of mine, Doc Love, who used to do the radio show with me at Clear Channel in Cincinnati, said, what if he, you know, I said, with the hype for this and the way it's being done, I don't think he dares do another retirement match after this. Seriously. You know, I mean, I don't know. I guess it would be people show up, but it just seemed like you would be, you know, thumbing your nose in people's faces.
Yes. You know? Well, here's hoping this match is good enough that Terry Funk's coming out of retirement record is safe.
Yes, I would hope. I would hope so.
Well, with that, brother, I think we're ready to wrap up this edition of Doc Young's Wrestling Weekly. You ready to call it a weekend?
I'm about, yeah. We had some flooding in Knoxville the last 24 hours, none around me. But yeah, I'm just good for some decent weather. And actually, we're having the 90s, but we're not having any of the crazy weather that you guys are having up there or they're having out west. That's a good thing.
Listen, there was flooding here on Monday. You know, anytime if you live near northern New Jersey, you know, if somebody spits off the roof, you could flood in some towns around here. But there were some serious thunderstorms earlier in the week. So we've gone from flooding to 100 degrees on the heat index in the span of the last few days. And that's probably going to continue here through this weekend. But I'm going to do my best by making the most of it and making the electric company very happy by cranking the AC.
Yeah. I got. Plus, you got an electric car, too, so you got to plug that in.
That is also true. You are correct. Oh, man, they're just making all their money off of me this weekend, aren't they?
They are. They love you.
All right. Well, we're wrapping up this edition of Doc Young's Wrestling Weekly. For the legend Les Thatcher, my name is Victor Sosa. In all sincerity, thank you so much for taking time out of your weekend to spend some of it here with us. If you're going to be checking out Ring of Honor's Death Before Dishonor pay-per-view, have a great time. Enjoy the show. And we'll talk to you again next week.